Hola y gracias por volar en la aerolínea Aria de Phil Henry. Estaremos volando a una altitud de 30,000 pies. Oh, y también Green Card. El vuelo de esta noche estaremos presentando diarrea.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. This evening, Halloween 99, we have a variety of tales to tell, actually, about Henry Lee Lucas, Otis Toole. These were two very notorious serial murderers from the early 80s, late 70s. They were eventually apprehended. Otis Toole died in prison. Henry Lee Lucas is still on death row in Florida, although his sentence... And when I read some of this stuff, you tell me whether George W. Bush Jr. should have commuted a sentence. I say he's in Texas. I shouldn't say Florida. George W. Bush Jr., the governor of Texas, commuted his sentence to life imprisonment because a lot of this stuff, they simply aren't able to prove. According to police records, shortly after Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole met, they spent their leisure time drinking and cruising the highways looking for fun. Apparently, their idea of fun was to rob small convenience stores and, on the odd occasions, banks. They stole money, food, and beer and took obvious delight in terrorizing the staff. The pair became bolder and more violent with every crime. Eventually, their crimes became more brutal to the point where, if a store clerk or bank teller resisted in the slightest way, they were gunned down and left in a pool of blood. Lucas would later relate one such incident to the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. He told police that he and Otis robbed a small convenience store in western Georgia. Lucas walked to the front counter and produced a .22 caliber handgun and held it to the temple of the female clerk. After binding the terrified woman with rope, he dragged her to the back of the store while Toole rifled through the till. The woman began to scream and struggle to get loose. Lucas told her, "I'll kill you if you don't keep quiet. I'm going to have to shoot you." Fearing for her life, the woman obeyed. As they were dividing the money, Lucas noticed that the woman was trying to loosen the ropes on her hands. Casually, he walked to the back of the store and shot her through the temple. Afterwards, while Henry loaded cases of beer into their car, Toole had sex with the woman's body. At the conclusion of the admission, Lucas told police, "Now see, that's the difference between me and Otis. He just kills him when he feels like it. At least I warn him first." What disturbed the investigators most was that Lucas told the story without any emotion or remorse, as though he were describing an incident that someone else was responsible for. The killing continued to escalate as the murderous pair seized every opportunity to commit more and more brutal crimes. They seemed to be driven by the desire to prove who was the more lethal. Toole later bragged to police of one such incident. While cruising the I-35 highway through Texas, they came across a teenage couple walking alongside the road. Apparently, the couple's car had run out of gas, and they were on their way to a local filling station. Otis stepped out of the vehicle and shot the boy 9 times in the head and chest and rolled the body into a culvert, while Lucas dragged the hysterical girl into the back seat. While Otis drove, Henry raped the girl repeatedly. Otis explained that watching Lucas have sex with someone else made him angry. Seething with jealous rage, Toole then stopped the car and, dragging the girl onto the roadway, shot her 6 times. Then they drove back toward Jacksonville, leaving the woman's body lying on the road. Everyone they came in contact with was a potential victim. Drifters, women with car problems, hitchhikers, all fell prey to the deadly duo. Because the murders were mostly committed in remote areas, there were no witnesses. If their cars broke down or ran out of gas, they would steal another, usually murdering the driver. They would then drive the new vehicle to another state, dump it, and hitchhike to the next location. When they weren't robbing, raping, and killing, they'd work odd jobs until the urge for blood became too strong and they continued their odyssey of destruction. The killing was to continue, even when the pair later traveled with Frank and Becky Powell, who by that time had become Henry's lover. She was just 12 years old. From Maryland to California, Texas to Michigan, they raped, they robbed, and they murdered. Often while Frank and Becky waited in the car, the two men would commit their crimes and drive off as though nothing unusual had occurred. Henry said he particularly enjoyed killing women whose cars had broken down on lonely roads. He told police he considered them free lunch. One such victim was found dumped in a field, completely nude. She'd been stabbed 35 times in the chest, the neck, the arms, and back. Deep cuts had been made along the inside of her arms and from the middle of her chest to the pubic bone. Both nipples had been cut off and removed. According to the police, who methodically pieced together the killer's trail of terror from payslips and discarded vehicles, Otis and Henry Lucas were responsible for up to 4 or 5 murders in each state before moving across state lines to avoid detection. On more than 2 occasions, the pair committed several murders in a single day. Here is a statement that Otis Toole made for a French cable TV documentary. These are the words of Otis Toole. I used to hear voices. Right now, I could go to my mother's grave and lay down on the dirt and hear and feel the dirt vibrating. And I can hear her moving around down there. I know she was hearing me when I was talking to her, laying down and talking to her, and I could feel the dirt vibrating. I used to go out there all the time. And I used to go to my grandmother and walk with her into graveyards. We used to dig up all kinds of bones, get all kinds of herbs, and she used to take the bones and do devil worship. She would put spells in you with the bones. She would make voodoo dolls, take a chicken and wring the chicken's neck. I had to do what she said. She told me I belonged to the devil. She'd say, you do what I tell you to do. You can't quit. You ain't never gonna quit. You do what I say. I said, well, maybe she's akin to the hands of death, you know. But she was a real witch. She wore long dresses, long hair. She covered her face. She went through graveyards and barns, putting spells, burning altars. She had skulls in her house. She showed me how to take a drawer and turn it upside down and build an altar out of it and take hands and a knife and a cup and put it all up there. It was real interesting. There was no slowing up. When I was real little, my dad put me under the clothesline. He tied these 2 cats' tails together. I was under the clothesline and these cats just scratched each other's guts out, blood running over the top of me. I was yelling. I was real young. And he was akin to the devil. They used to make meat from a dog. I was real little. I used to dress up like a girl when I was real little, so it got wilder and wilder over the years. Couldn't stop, worse and worse. It just kept coming, wide open. I didn't know what to do, stop or quit or what. So I kept going, doing what my grandma told me to do. I just kept going. Sometimes she'd get a fresh body and cut the head off and all, and then she'd take the head in her hands and hold it until the skin dried, and sometimes she'd take the skin and put it up against her skin. I don't know why she was doing that. She'd cut the skin open and put it over her skin. I don't know why. She said it made her skin stay young, but I don't know why she did it. I just did what she told me to do. That is a statement by Otis Toole, who was Henry Lee Lucas's partner in crime, given to a French film crew for a television documentary. It was never broadcast.
Man, that was great.
Thank you, bud.
But no, I'm serious, man. I have heard you do stuff that blew me away.
Thank you.
That'll go on a CD more than the other thing.
I appreciate that.
Jesus Christ. I mean, the way you deliver...
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
I'm just telling you, it's good.
I appreciate that. Halloween 99, this is the Phil Henry Show.
See this? I just wanted to see something.
What?
I just wanted to look at this.
What is that?
I peed.
That's pee?
I peed my pants listening to what you're doing.
Well, clean it up!
I peed... I mean, I just want you to know, I peed. But
that's great that you peed. Clean it up. Do you see this? Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show here. We got more of Henry Lee Lucas, Deadly Drifter. And I don't know whether I ought to read this next. I'm very torn whether I should read this material that I have here, Mike. And this is an interview conducted by, I believe it's the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, an interview that they did with Otis Toole about the Adam Walsh case. I'm torn because it involves very, very sensitive, high-profile case. I don't know. Maybe we'll get into it. But this is the chapter entitled Lost Love. Henry Lee Lucas. Now, where we left off, of course, Henry Lee and Otis have taken up with Becky. Becky Powell, Frida Becky Powell. Even though they've been on the road many times, Henry and Becky found it increasingly difficult now to get a ride. Many vehicles would slow down, some out of curiosity, others to openly leer at Becky. Whatever the reason, it seemed as soon as they saw Henry, they would speed up and leave them in a cloud of dust. Their trek continued until they reached Demon County, Texas, where they decided to find a cheap motel and get some rest before continuing. Hot, tired, and filthy, they trudged from one motel to another trying to find a vacant room. Unable to find one, they decided to sleep in an open field on the edge of town. Lucas later related in a statement to police that after unpacking their bedrolls, he lay down and started drinking heavily. Becky stripped down to her underwear and lay beside him. As Lucas's level of intoxication increased, he started to abuse Becky for insisting that they leave a commune they'd been living at called the House of Prayer. The result was a violent argument, with both of them yelling and swearing at each other. Finally, Henry told her that he had made the decision to return to Stoneburg the following morning. Her response was to hit him on the side of the head. That was it, Henry recalled. I just stabbed her with my knife. I just picked it up, brought it around, hit her right in the chest with it. She sort of sat there for a little bit and then dropped on over. Lucas said that immediately after the attack, he was shocked that he could take the life of someone that he loved. Well, his shock couldn't have lasted that long because, according to his statement, I took her bra and panties off and had sex with her. That's one of those things, I guess, that got to be a part of my life, having sexual intercourse with the dead. Lucas then removed a ring from her hand and cut her body into pieces and stuffed her remains into three pillowcases and left her in the field while he walked around thinking about what to do next. He remembers that he was overcome with a strange feeling that he couldn't explain, and he was unable to rid himself of that feeling. He had destroyed something very special in his life, and even though he had killed many times, the murder of Frida Becky Powell was to be the first time Henry Lee Lucas would feel guilt and remorse for his actions.
Then what happened?
I'm sorry?
Then what happened?
Then what happened? I mean...
Then what happened?
I just read the story of how this woman that he lived with and that he loved...
Right. He loved, then he stabbed her, right?
Yeah, he stabbed... Would you do me a favor and get away from me, okay?
Yeah, but what happened?
Would you do me the big favor, the wonderful favor of getting away from me now, okay? Sit over there, all right?
What happened?
What happened? I don't know what happened next, man. I gotta go through all this crap that I got to find out what happened next.
Then what happened?
I already heard you ask me what happened. Turn the music off. You know something, man? Let me explain something. Come here for a minute, bud. Come here.
Right.
You see, I got online this afternoon, and I got a lot of this stuff, and I planned out a nice, spooky storytelling thing.
No, it's great. It's great.
Yeah, but when I finish doing it, and I've got all the spooky music, and then you come on with, then what happened, you've destroyed the entire mood of what it was that I was trying to do.
No, I mean, I liked it a lot.
What's the name of this show? Is it the Bud and Phil Show?
What?
What is the name of the show, by the way? I'm just curious. Is this called the Bud and Phil Show? Or is this the Phil Henry Show?
It's the Phil Henry Show, but you want me to be... to do.
I know, to pick music. And to help me collect copy. And to help me get the show set, okay? It doesn't mean you butt in every time I do something. I try to set a mood... And I read the whole thing about the Deadly Drifter thing.
If you're mean to me, it'll be called the Phil the Butt Ass Show, or the Ass Show,
I get it, okay?
If you're mean to me, but if you're mean to me...
I'm not being mean to you, man. I'm just saying to you, I read the whole thing, and then you pop in with, then what happened?
But I'm articulating what the audience want to know. And it,
well, I tell you what, why don't you let me guess what the audience wants to know, and I'll continue on, okay?
You'll be the Phil Ass Show.
Yeah, well, guess what? It ain't the Phil Ass Show yet. It's the Phil Henry Show.
You're mean to me.
I'm not being mean to you at all.
You told me to get away.
Yes, I did tell you to get away. Yeah, you're accurate in that statement. I did tell you to get away from me because I was doing the whole bit, and you got the then what happened.
What about Adam Walsh?
I don't know whether I'm going to read this stuff or not. It's very sensitive. I got to talk to my producer. It's scary stuff. It's very graphic. Very sensitive. It's extremely high profile, okay?
I understand.
Thank you. I'm glad you understand.
That's the kid who got his head cut off, right? Ain't that the kid who got his head cut off?
Yeah, that's the kid who got his head cut off.
Then what happened?
That's what I'm going to have to talk to Mike about. Get out of here.
What?
Get out of, go over there. That's the kid who got his head cut off. Then what happened? I'll find out if I read it. Everybody gets to find out if I read it, okay? If I don't read it, then you don't get to find out. I'm going to talk to my producer.
Then again, it was the kid of John Walsh?
Yes, it's the kid of John Walsh. Would you please get him out of here before I commit homicide? Thank you very much, Mike Schaefer, my producer. Get him out of here before I commit cold-blooded murder. See ya, bud.
What an asshole. Boy, that's too bad.
That's me, man.
Real asshole.
That's me, baby. You too, and more of it.
Yeah, real ass.
You too, and more of it.
Asshole.
But.
But ass.
Jeez.
The Phil Ashery Show will continue in a little bit right after Asshole takes a break.
You too, buddy.
You too.
And more of it.
You and more of it.
Goodbye.
Ass.
Goodbye.
Phil McCrevis Show right here.
Goodbye. Phil McCrevis Show. That's funny.
Yeah, it's funnier than anything you said tonight.
Is that right?
That's right. Funniest thing in the show tonight. Phil McCrevis. It's the Phil McCrevis Show. He's going to be right back.
Пані Phil Henry Air. Наш полет будет проходить на висоте 300 тысяч фит. И еще ватка.
1-800-5, whatever the hell it is, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show. This is an interview, allegedly. Now, I pulled this off of the Sandra London website. I will give that website, www.sandralondon.com. I will give that website credit for this. And I have no way of knowing whether this actually took place, this interview. In 1998, so says the transcript, Otis Toole, again, this was Henry Lee Lucas's partner in crime, gave Bruce Ritchie this interview, which he did not report. So the following is what allegedly transpired between Otis Toole and this reporter and what he claims he told Florida Department for Law Enforcement. And what is alleged herein, I have no way of knowing whether it is factual or not. We certainly do know that this man died in prison. And there is a preamble here, quoting a gentleman by the name of Leroy Hessler, assistant Hollywood police chief. We feel quite confident that Toole is the individual who killed Adam Walsh. Now, Ritchie asks the question, the reporter Bruce Ritchie, you want to talk to me about the Adam Walsh case? Toole. That kid was snatched from a Sears about 20 miles from Miami. He was took out of a shopping center. I would deal with Florida law enforcement out of Tallahassee on that case. I would deal with them all the way, 100%, because I want to clean my system out. Since I've been here, I got closer to God, and when I was doing all this here, I was all into devil worship at the time. I was dealing with devil worship and drinking blood and all that. See, I've been doing this stuff all my life. I didn't just start on it yesterday. I know I'm gone, put myself in more hell than I'm in now, but I want to clear my system out. I have to take medication all the time. I have to take Thorazine and Dilantin all the time because I can't keep myself calmed down, so I have to deal with all that all the time. It's ripping me apart inside and messing my mind up more. I know if I can talk to the right person, I might be able to clean out my system. Richie says, "What can you tell me about the Adam Walsh case?" Tool responds, "It reminds me of when I was a child. I was molested and raped when I was a child. I was about 6 years old. I told my mother and father about it, and they just wouldn't pay no attention to it. It ain't just the Walsh case. I want to clear out my system. It's a lot of other cases. But that Walsh case really bothers me since I've really been thinking about it. It'd take a pretty good while for me to go through that whole story. I can, but it wouldn't make much sense, me talking real fast and all. You won't be able to get down what I'm saying. Well, maybe we could try. It ain't no new case. People keep asking me about that case. Well, it's still a mystery. Where's his body left?" Tool responds, "I can't get into all that. It just ain't something that you can dream up. It's something that really happened. That same thing could have happened to me when I got raped when I was a kid. I'm saying to a certain extent, Adam Walsh got raped his own self. That's why they didn't ever find the remains of the body, because I wouldn't ever tell where it was. If I don't tell them where the remains is, I can stop them in their tracks, because they don't really want to deal with me, you know. I don't want to go to jail somewhere for somebody to treat me like a dog and all that, because it really bothered me about that case. The way it happened to him reminds me of my childhood, too. It's really filthy. It's a filthy killing. It ain't no killing that's clean." Richie says, "Do you want to tell me where the body is?" Otis Tool responds, "His head was chopped off and thrown in that canal right there between 118 marker and 138 marker on the toll road. Otherwise, he was molested and chopped up, and I left some parts all through the canal, and I took some of the parts back to Jacksonville, and I burned some of the parts. And I deal in cannibalism, too, I do. I ate some of the parts of the body, you know, and I dumped some of the remains in the Jacksonville dump. I mostly chopped the pieces up into little pieces, not in big pieces. Jacksonville police don't know they got the knife there. Jacksonville, and there was a machete there, too. They don't know they got the machete. Otherwise, the bayonet that I chopped the pieces up, I can't really deal with people too much because I don't know how to approach being around people, so I have to stay locked down because I can't approach the population or anybody else because I might go haywire again and just start chopping up somebody. I'm trying to keep myself away from all that, from getting involved and all that." Richie asks, "Have you told the authorities now where the body is?" Tool responds, "No, I ain't told them. They don't know where it is. There are a lot of cases with young people, older people that ain't never got cleared up. See, I ain't satisfied with it. I ain't on death row no more, and I ain't gonna be satisfied with what's going on with myself, because I keep getting frustrated all different times. If I was out in population, I might go haywire. I have different people say if they take me out, they wouldn't get no bad time, and they wouldn't get put in the electric chair for taking me out. I have a lot of people saying that. I had this Walsh case keeps being thrown up to me. It ain't just now. It's been going on for a long time. That just ain't never stopped. They won't slow down the issue. They just keep shoving and shoving. They won't even slow down. I reckon they want to make me go off and take one of them out the way they keep acting. Other inmates, not only the Walsh case, they keep bothering me about other cases, you know." Richie says, "You sound like you just want to deal with the FDLE, that's the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and you don't want to talk to anybody else." Tool says, "Way back when I tried on the Johnson case, killing the Johnson girl in Tallahassee was kind of an accidental thing. That was the case I come off death row on. The George Sonnenberg case, he was my ex-lover on the street. I meant to kill him, you know, because I love seeing big fires. I get off on big fires. The bigger the fire is, the better I like it. I mean, I really meant to take his ass out, you know. And if I had the chance again, I'd take his ass out again. I would. It's just the way he kept shoving on me. He wouldn't let up, you know. He wouldn't slow up on nothing at all. And I just got tired of him running his mouth. That's when I set the house on fire. I went and got 5 gallons of gasoline and burned his house up. I meant to do it, you know, because I get off on fires. They make me get off. I've been doing all this since I was a child. I didn't just start doing it yesterday or the day before. I'm charged on a case I did way back in 1968. I can go all the way back in my childhood. I choked a woman when I was 14 years old. And when Henry Lee, you've heard of Henry Lee Lucas, well, he was my ex-lover, you know, and he told me, you tell on me and I'll tell on you. He said, that's what I want you to do. I'll tell on you if you tell on me. Richie asks, have you heard from Henry Lee Lucas recently? Tool says, yeah, he's talking again now. He's in the state of Texas, he is. I got my death sentence overturned on being a pyromaniac, and that's what it was overturned on. I got about 125 cases in the state of Florida, you know. I've been involved in all this since I was a child, through the cult, you know. See, my partner calls it the hands of death, you know. That's what he calls it. He's written a book back in 1985 about it called The Hands of Death, and he got in touch with somebody that I got in touch with, and he says he's talking more and trying to clear up everything more and more now than he did before, because he said his mind is getting clear on all of it. And I want to get my mind cleared up, too. But we went through the state of Texas like a hurricane, we did. That's the way we messed things up in the state of Texas when we went through it. Richie asks, You've said you dumped Adam Walsh's body in the canal, and you also said you burned... You burned it in a refrigerator, and you dumped it in a landfill in Jacksonville? Tool says, and I ate some of it, too. And Richie asks, but authorities say they don't believe you because you changed your story. And Tool responds, see, what it is, they didn't keep lining up the whole story all the way through. See, what they did, they went back and jumped on different stories. I was going through the whole story all the way, through and through. And they chopped it up into different stories. They just didn't go all the way through the whole case the way I was telling it. They just kept jumping around. That way they couldn't do nothing on the case. It was the right case that was running straight on through. Richie asks him, how many different locations would you say you dumped parts of his body? Tool says, all up and down in between that freeway. And then I took some of it back to Jacksonville and barbecued it just like ribs and ate it. Ate the ribs, you know. Richie says, can the police ever find anything? Tool says, they can take me back down there and we can start from the go and go all the way through the case. They want to clear up the whole case, we can. But if they want to keep BSing around, I can still number one suspect on the case. You know, in God's eyes, if you say you've done something, let's just say somebody's walking down the street and you say, I'm going to kill that person. It's the same thing as doing it because it's in your mind. See, I've been saved since I've been in here. I've been saved, and I'm trying to clear my soul up, and I'm trying to get right with God. Richie says, how did you get saved? There was a guy I got talking to, another inmate. He said, Otis, regardless of which way it goes, you've gone through hell, but there's only one thing. God can forgive you, and God will always love you, but men and women will never forgive you for what you've done, because they're all sinners. But you got some that's really religious, that really believes in God. You can use God, you know. You can use a person. You can use God, too. God sees everything that's going on 24 hours a day. He'll always be with you, and he sees everything that's going on. You can't lie to him because he sees it. He's right here. So I'm cleaning myself up with God, regardless of what other people think. They can dislike, hate, or whatever, but it's really true about God. He can always forgive you for what you've done, but you can't always go back and forth. See, I ain't never going back again. The way I'm going now, I'm going to let it all out. I'm not going to hold nothing back again. Then Richie asks, when did you discover God? Tool says, well, my friend's gone from here now, but he got talking to me. His name is Jerry, and he wrote a lot of letters for me, and he'd sign my name. Gerard Schaefer? Yeah, Jerry Schaefer. He's the one told me to clean myself up with God. I really started getting into more and more believing in it about 3 months ago, and God's the only person that can turn to you, and you can really trust him, and he'll love you, and he'll look out for you. Jerry Schaefer's my friend. He was on the same wing with me. He was next door to me. That's when I was on M wing, and I was in cell 5, and Jerry got transferred down to Marion. Richie says, what would you say to Adam Walsh's parents? Tool says that I don't blame them for destroying something that they loved in their family, somebody that was a young, beautiful, innocent child, for a man and woman to love that child like they did because they really and truly loved Adam Walsh, they did. I know I messed up their life quite a bit by taking someone from them that they really loved. If they hate me, I can't blame them. But I know that God loves me, and I know God loves them, and God will look out for them and everyone that's in their family. And I wish I didn't destroy little Adam Walsh, their son. And I know they've been through a lot of hell since by losing someone that they love. After someone's gone, you ain't lost their love, because their love is always in your heart. You might lose that person, but you don't lose the love of the person. Can you tell me how you first saw Adam Walsh? Richie asks. He was right there by Sears at the shopping center, and he was playing with a fire truck. He had a red engine, a little red fire engine. I got talking to him, and he told me he likes baseball, and I sat down and I talked to him a little bit, and I said, well, I'm going to kidnap this boy, you know. I said that to myself. I said, I had some toys and candy in the car. I said, well, come on over to the car, and I'll give you some candy and some toys. And I snatched him up. I put him in the car. I told him, I said, all the toys ain't in my car. We have to go to my house to get the rest of them. I said, we won't be gone long. And he started whining a little bit, wanting to get out of the car, you know. So I hit him real hard in the chest. I knocked the breath out of him. Then I got on the Turnpike freeway. I got one of them tickets. I got further down the road. And I chopped his head off.
Well.
And if you ask me what happens next, okay?
No, not seeing a thing, man. Wow.
It's pretty scary, isn't it?
I'll say.
Anyway, as I said, that is a statement allegedly given by Otis Tool to a reporter. It was not reported, however, it is available on www.sandralondon.com. And he died in prison. Henry Lee Lucas, the other guy that you keep hearing referred to, is still on death row, although his life sentence has been commuted in Texas.
When are they going to put him to death?
They commuted his sentence to life in prison.
Well, is he on death row?
I guess not. I mean, quit asking me these questions, man. Come on. It's the Phil Henry Show here at 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry here, 1-800-449-8686. So how about that guy, Henry Lee, huh, and Otis Toole? And you ought to see the pictures of these cats. Good looking? Oh, God, that Otis Toole's a good looking guy. With the teeth and the thin, they're brown, green, and oh. And these guys, there was a film called Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. You familiar with that film? Loosely, and I say loosely based on their exploits, although they had the principles. There was the dumb sidekick, there was the completely psychopathic leader of the trio, and there was the girl that Henry fell in love with that he eventually kills. At the end of the film, he leaves a suitcase by the side of the road. They check into the motel together, and when he checks out, he's all alone. He throws a suitcase into the back of the truck and then leaves the suitcase by the side of the road. You can only guess what's inside of that, and that's her. So I say loosely, but I mean, there were some things that paralleled fairly closely. But these two guys, and people, you know, say, how can they, I just don't get it. Well, here's the story. They're born without a conscience. They're born without emotion. That's what a serial killer is. Some of them call them devoid killers. They're devoid of emotion. Some people call them recreational killers. They don't go out and kill for money. They kill for the need to feel power. You see, they're born with a birth defect. They don't have any emotional state. And people get so upset when they see these guys on trial like Dahmer or a guy that can manipulate the emotions. You know, he can sort of put on emotional life like Ted Bundy. So he looks around at the people around him. He sees how they act, and he mimics their behavior. That's what Bundy did. So he'd see how people got through in life by being friendly and happy and good-looking. So he would mimic that. But in point of fact, Bundy had no emotional life whatsoever, neither did Dahmer, neither did any of these guys. So when you're born without any emotion, you feel pretty powerless because you can't feel anything. And the only way that they can feel something is by having complete power over another human being. And the only complete, truly complete power of another human being that they feel they can have is by killing them. And how many times did you hear during the Dahmer case, I wanted him to be my love slave. I wanted him to be my sex zombie. I wanted to drill his head and turn him into my zombie. They want to have complete and utter power over these people. In Dahmer's case, trying to keep them alive, but keep them alive as sort of a zombie. Well, you can't do it. You know, obviously. I mean, we live in the real world. These guys are off God knows where. But are they nuts? Are they nuts? Legally, insanity means you don't know the difference between right and wrong. These guys do. They know that what they're doing is against the law and is wrong, quote unquote, and they can go to prison for it. So legally, they're not insane. But you ain't going to be going to no block party with guys like this, man. You're going to go to apple bobbing with these dudes or taking a hayride. These cats are whack. But they're not legally insane, so you can fry a guy like this, right? And I mean, in my life, and I don't want to sound like every other freaking talk show host who has had a change of heart and is tired of the liberal ways of society. And I never talk about this on a show, but I just will, for the point of argument, for the sake of argument, I'll tell you that I am a very liberal Democrat. My man is Al Gore. What do you think of that? But as far as the death penalty goes, Jim, I've changed my tune 180 freaking degrees. Kiss these guys goodbye. Put them in a chair. Go ahead and throw the switch on old Sparkaroo. Drop the pill on them up there at the Quentin. Whatever you got to do. And see you later. Sayonara. So anyway, not that we're going to get into that because I'd rather not. But the point being that these people are born without any emotional life. They are literally, it's like a birth defect. They lose whatever emotional state or stability they have within the first 3 years of their life. Many of them come from obviously exceedingly abusive homes. And many of them come from homes where they were abandoned. A parent leaves, a mother leaves. That connection the child has to mother or to parent is severed very early in their life. Whatever the hell it is, and gradually, very slowly, psychiatrists and psychologists are beginning to piece these things together. So now that we know sort of what maybe creates these individuals, can we stop them? Can we stop them from being made? Well, maybe someday when we start taking a little bit more responsibility for each other in a society that is increasingly becoming isolationistic in terms of the individual. Everybody wants to do their own freaking thing, man. I don't know why my tax dollars go to that crap. So we'll keep manufacturing guys like this, but at least we can identify them earlier. And they say there's a thing called a homicidal triangle. The homicidal triangle comes into evidence early on in an individual's life, such as these two creeps. And that is, three things happen. They begin to abuse animals, they wet their beds, believe it or not, and they start getting involved in pyromania or setting fires. If a kid evidences those three things together, there's a good chance you might want to send his DNA off to the FBI. Bedwetting? Oh, Crozier's looking at me right now, going, God damn, I did just that stuff last Friday. Bedwetting, setting fires, and torturing or abusing animals. Those three things together, you see that in a kid, get them off to a head shrinker for sure, and maybe take a little piece of hair and send it off to the FBI. So they got it on file. Mike. And so gradually and slowly and surely and all of those things, surely, they figure these things out, and we're a little bit closer. And of course, all of these guys working for the FBI, John Douglas's book, Mindhunter, maybe you read it. If you saw Silence of the Lambs, the FBI, the head FBI agent in that movie was based on John Douglas. He is the first profiler, serial profiler in the FBI. He can take a look at a crime scene and tell you how tall a guy is. He can take a look at how the crime scene was left and tell you what color the guy's eyes were. That's how good they're getting. But it doesn't keep you from preventing these creeps, but you can catch them a little bit quicker, maybe. And that's the story of Henry and Otis. Wasn't that a movie with a cat and a pig, or... Oh, Milo and Otis. Phil Hendry Show.